It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Oh, welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock. Oh, I apologize. Eric Garris had to reschedule. He had something come up. I didn't even get to check with what, but we'll get him back here in a little bit. But that brings up an opportunity for us to talk about something else I wanted to talk about before Brad Friedman comes on to talk about the, you know, election computers. It's always in the news. He and I have been doing this for years, and it's just, I get it. I mean, what are you going to tell me? Ernie, did you know? And I'm like, what? You're going to tell me that they're really, 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 really bad? You're going to add another really for me? I'm going, okay, I get it. I mean, how much really do I need? And this whole voting thing, I'm just, oh, come on. But you get people paying attention during that time. And this is what we did this weekend, I tell you. Freedom's Phoenix Workshop here. We had a bunch of people came by Saturday, and we've done a lot of different stencils that we make that you can make signs with. And we've been cutting up the material to be able to, you know, paint onto, you know, the actual sign strata itself. We have different kinds of things that we use. And then we had the people come. We got all ready. Don and I got everything all set up. Had a couple of guys come, get you ready, and go. And I went in silkscreen t-shirts because we had a bunch of t-shirt capacity over there and dryers and all that kind of, we got it going on. We'll put some stuff up on the site. I keep having to fill back orders of people that just want stuff. And we had, what happened is they found at a dollar store these really nice little shirts for children. And they go down, you know, from, oh, I guess you're probably 6-7 years old, and even some infant wear and so on. It goes on up. They're like less than a dollar a piece. So they had all the kinds of nice bright colors and everything. They just went and bought a bunch of them. You know, you get $50 worth, you got 50 shirts. I mean, normally they go for more. So we just went and got a bunch of stuff. They brought them in. Do this for my granddaughter. Do this for my kid. Do this for, okay. So we started doing a lot of different images that we have on it. While I'm doing that, they're out there making the signs. Well, we didn't put them up. We just made a bunch of signs. So now we have these signs, and they're very cool. We'll start taking pictures this week as we start putting them up and everything during the election cycle. What happens? They've already started early balloting. You know, so are we missing that? Or, you know, they already started early balloting, Ernie. You need to get it. I'm going, no, that was never my goal. Our goal is how many minds can we free? You know, can we inject messages into the matrix while they're paying attention? Absolutely. And when do you do that? Well, the first thing is you wait until it's under 100 degrees. Well, it's going back up again this week. It's going to be like over 100, 105 by, you know, Wednesday, Thursday. I'm like, dang. You know, dang. You know, so I started checking on it. You know, we got some global warming here. We got some sunspots or what? And yep, sure enough, there's some sun activity that's doing whatever, but, you know, who cares? So I'm just, you know, it's still nice here. It's under 100. It's in the 90s, man. We're styling anyway. While you guys are all freezing back there, we're walking around in shorts, and it's fairly nice. I like this kind of weather. It's in the 90s, 80s, 90s, because it's dry. You know, it's nice weather. I enjoy it. And we can still go swimming. So we're still swimming in our pose. How about y'all? Well, what we're doing is we're taking this opportunity to let it cool down a little bit. And at night, it's cooler. So by this weekend, they will go ahead and start putting all these up. And we'll make some more signs. We'll put them up, and they'll take them down. And we'll put them up, and they'll take them down again. I'd be shocked if some of these signs, they last more than, I don't know, 4 or 5 hours during rush hour traffic on freeway overpass. Ooh, did I say that out loud? Would they do that? That'd be bad, right? So what we do is we go ahead and make them. What they do with them is up to them. I have no idea. just as a news reporter, I'm sharing with you that some evil bad people are putting them on freeway overpasses. You shouldn't do that. That's bad because somebody said it was. I don't know why. But anyway, so you go ahead, you put this up, and you inject the message into the matrix. The injection of the libertarian, freedom-oriented, liberty-oriented infection into the bone marrow of American politics for which there is no cure. Once you, how do you unlearn the truth? I mean, a lot of these things that we do is just, you know, bam, bam, wow, you know, that's a good way, but I didn't think of that. You know, so we have a lot of these different messages and so on that we've had for years. I mean, that we've done, you know, since the revolution. So we inject that into the matrix, into the minds of the people here. What impact does that have? I don't know. It's better not. Does it change the way they vote? I'm not even really focusing on the people that vote. It's just people. It's just people. Stop the theft. Theft, even by government, is still theft. I mean, you know, just simple concepts like that. They're like, yeah, that's a ticket, yeah. And it's like, you know, a lot of times I'll have someone on the show, just like in the last hour we had Caitlin Flaherty. She's been around for years, you know, really pressing for the, can't we have a Department of Government that's for peace? And I'm going, probably not. Seriously. Because the very existence of government is, and the funding of them and the power you cede to them or they take is, comes from violence. It comes from force or threat of force. It comes from a gun to your head taking your money. I mean, they're going to, you know, we're for peace, so we're going to stop taking your money. I don't think so. I don't see that coming. So when I have these people on, oftentimes it's not so much, it's also to entertain and inform everyone, but a lot of times I'm trying to have an influence on them. Because they are influential. They do associate with a lot of different groups and a lot of different people. I know Caitlin does. So and we've had these conversations before. When you're in a direct conversation with someone, it's a lot of times it's a debate. If it's with an audience in a forum or a debate style or a radio interview, they have to take into consideration what your argument has an impact on the audience. If you have a conversation like I'm having with you now, with the audience, you don't have the expectation that you're just going to be able to wait for me to finish what I'm saying, and you're thinking about what you're going to say, and you're just going to say it and have some influence on me. You're in listening mode, unless you call in. If you want to call in, you can do that, 866-986-6397, 866-986-6397, 866-986-NEWS. You know, and I don't give the number out a lot. I don't, you know, push for callers a lot and so on because I oftentimes the audience is, anyone that calls in, they want to challenge you on different things. I don't have a problem with that. I just don't like making people feel uncomfortable or, you know, put, where do we overlap? Where do we agree? And a lot of times I come up with the questions that I think that people want to know and be able to articulate what my position is. You know, so if you want to talk, you want to do it, go ahead. Go ahead. You call on in. We got until the bottom of the hour. We can do that. Otherwise, I got some other stuff to share with you, which I you know, always got something I want to share. And that's what we do. That's why we have freedomsphoenix.com. Freedoms with an S, phoenix.com. And the Freedom Summit's coming. Freedomsummit.com. And we're starting heavy promotion this last weekend already. Starting to go all over the internet. Here we go. There's a lot happening. And you guys get to be on the front lines. We'll be right back.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Declare your independence with me, Ernest Hancock, a little bit more freedom. Freedom's the answer. What's the question? Give me your question. Go ahead. Freedom, before you even finish saying it. I think freedom. Because what happens is if you make freedom of the individual the prime directive, what happens is that they are able to prosper in their own minds, whatever is important to them, not to some collective, not to somebody else. They determine if they want to be hillbilly living on the lone prairie of doing whatever and happy, you know, power to the people. You know, you don't got to go, oh, no. You need to go work and do whatever it is that I want you to do so that I get my cut of you doing it. You know, and we're for freedom. Yeah. You know, that's not what it is. You know, I just want people to be left alone. There are those that just want to be left alone and those that just won't leave them alone. It's so simple. I saw, you know, every now and then I'm flipping through the channels on, I guess I got Dish or whatever it is, some little satellite thing. And, there was a documentary channel. It's Doc, D-O-C, I think. And they have people, they do little documentaries and they put them up there. And there was this one, it was called The Last One. I'm like, last one what? Put it in, it was the last moonshiner. It was the last still, the last out in the woods of an Appalachian hillbilly boy out back there. And they said, you know, will you go ahead and show us how you do this? Of course, I'm sure it was illegal as heck, but they made this big corn, mash, I guess they call it corn mash still. And you get like, I guess it was like 100-gallon still that he built, and they got like 8 gallons, I think, I guess it's 8 gallons to every 100, something like that is about what they want, 120 proof moonshine, you know, ethanol. So I'm going, okay, all right, this is cool. You know, let's go ahead and watch this. And it was very interesting. And I think it was about an hour, maybe 2 hours. And it was called The Last One. And it's a moonshine. I bet you it's on the internet somewhere. The point about it was, is that they were talking about the culture and how it was portrayed in popular culture, you know, throughout this last century. Now, of course, during Prohibition, all these evil people doing evil stuff, you know, just like the same thing, drug dealer kind of stuff. We're going to go out in the revenueers and Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, and they're bad. And it was never seen like that. There was never, you know, negative connotation on these people. They out had to still on their freaking front porch. You know, they had to, once they passed all these laws and Prohibition of Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, they control who gets to do what. Then, of course, they started going out in the woods behind the whatever. Well, these stills, then they had the moonshiners. They were running the liquor. They had to deliver it, you know, like the drug dealers on the roads kind of stuff. Well, it took up space, so they had to put it in cars. Well, the cars would outrun the police and all that kind of stuff. That's where NASCAR came from. It was moonshiners. It was them taking their hopped-up cars and racing each other around dirt tracks. It turned into NASCAR. That's where it's so, you know, prevalent in the South. You know, this is why that was done. Well, what happened was they had him build it, which I thought was really cool. It was cool technology. It was pretty simple. And they had, you know, the kind of the schematics. Heck, from watching this thing, you probably build your own. But that was not the point. The point that they were making was is that, you know, the hillbillies, the people they were portraying and Snuffy Smith and all of these cartoons and, you know, Ol' Abner and, you know, all this kind of stuff that they would have in cartoons and comics and so on. They go, wow, yeah, they probably dress that way, but this is hard work. This is work. Work, 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 work. So there's an entire culture. It's always shifted. They use the press and the media to kind of shift around what the proper role of government is to do and get after people's freedoms. And if you just left them alone, they would be doing it for, I don't know, their own and other people and so on. And if they hurt someone, well, then they'd be held liable. I mean, you could actually go to court. You'd actually know who did it. You know, you don't need licensing or anything, that kind of stuff. It's just, you know, who's harming whom. So, I'm going, all right, fine. I just wanted to bring that up. You know, the last one. I got here an email from John Stewart. He is associated with Cynthia Cantrell. They put on classes, people about mortgages and so on. And he's been talking about this. And he sent me an email I want to read to you. And later on, we may get time to play a CNBC. I'll tell you what it is. The CNBC piece is, we got to just muscle through these foreclosures. I mean, you know, these people, they're just getting free house. They're, you know, whatever. And they're saying, like Cynthia was saying, look, we're not looking to get a free house, which, you know, like, I'm sure they'd take it. But, you know, our thing is so that these bad guys, they don't get a free house. They're just, you know, using the system and lying, cheating, stealing. They're getting a free house, and these judges are making stupid decisions. I mean, some of them in some jurisdictions are going, okay, I get, man, this is really a lot of fraud on the court. And some are going, yeah, so what? You know, bang, I hit the gavel anyway. Well, John Stewart asked this question. He goes, as you all know, I have been helping stop foreclosures for a while. The judges are a constant problem as their rulings favor the banks, even when ruling violates the law and the constitutions. At first, it seems so obvious that judges must be bribed, but we found no evidence as such. We could prove the bias of the court, but had no documentation to substantiate a reason for the bias. There are currently several class action suits against the banks initiated by pension funds. This caused me to wonder if the judges' pension funds are affected by the current real estate downturn. My hunch was correct, beyond my wildest expectations. After studying the judges' pension funds, I estimate in Arizona, every time a judge rules for a homeowner, he is throwing out between $2,000 and $10,000 out of his retirement, out of the fund that the judges have for their pension fund. The judges lost about $420 million over the last 2 years due to real estate. At that rate, their retirement will be gone before the end of 2011 unless they save the banks and destroy us. Although this is not a direct bribe in the strictest sense of the definition, it is still a bribe. When compared to the judge's blatant disregard for the rule of law in matters where the law would side with homeowners, we now have an obvious reason why the judges are willing to rule so incorrectly. I think this could be a really big story that could go national and cause everyone to start verifying their own county judges' pension funds. I have attached the links and files so you can verify what I'm claiming. We'll go ahead and get this up on Freedom's Phoenix, but I tell you, it's a very interesting point. All these municipal pension funds, that's where they went and got the money. Remember, we've talked about this. Goldman Sachs, you know, Goldman Sachs, whatever, they go up and they say, you know, how can we get your $1 billion to be our $1 billion? Well, there are several ways. One was, we get a AAA rating for you to invest in this thing, and we get 60% of it right off the top. It's in our pocket. Then we put it in these things that we're selling, and it goes trickle on down to the homeowner that you make your 6% per annual return if you invest in these mortgage-backed securities things, which are not. And they get the revenue stream. What happens when they stop paying the mortgages? Well, you don't get the revenue stream anymore. Well, they need to foreclose on the house. They want the asset. They're supposed to be backing it up. There isn't one. That was the point. And they severed that because it gave them a tax benefit so they could take more money up front and then still get the 6% return to the pension fund. And the only reason they could do it is if Moody's gave it a AAA rating. Well, you know, that was cheap. So they did that. And Goldman Sachs, still the mortgager, the person that took out the mortgage, the home, they knew they were going to fail. So what'd they do? They went ahead and bet against it on these derivatives. You know, the AIG said, all right, we're going to do insurance. And it goes bad, you get, you know, up to 30 times. So a $300,000 home is worth $9 million for them to default to Goldman Sachs. So what do? They go to the Congress and taxpayers and say, guess what? We got to bail out AIG, man. Too big to fail. Give them $700 billion so they can pay us off. That's why. That's what they did. This was fraud from the beginning. Why would judges paper over this fraud? Because if they don't, their pension goes broke. Ow! 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 Yeah, you think this isn't going to come out? I think it. Yeah, I think I might help. Well, that's what we're going to do. We're going to go ahead and put it up because, I mean, dang. Dang. It's all over, man. It's all over. We'll be talking about it more this week because it's not going away. And this is going to be, and you know the Obama administration is going to side with not you. We'll be right back.
There are those that just want to be left alone and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Turn on the tube.
And Independence of me, Ernest Hancock, and do something about it. Well, there are some people that are doing something about it, have been doing something about it for a long time. My good friend Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Bradblog.com. Brad, I got you there.
You do indeed. How are you, sir?
I'm more than wonderful. I see that you are on the case, as it were, and I am very interested in talking to you about some things of crucial import that you can only you have all of it consolidated in your head and on your website, bradblog.com, where we can talk about a story that is of interest. Let me go ahead and give the quickie here. District of Columbia in Washington, D.C. had a system that they were demonstrating. They challenged anybody to hack into it, I guess. And they said, come hack into it. Boom. Okay, here, we hacked into it. Now what?
Yeah.
So go ahead and tell me the story, because it's, and I know you'll do a good job. I'm just sitting back here, you know, dancing on my tippy toes going, ooh, this is good. It has all kinds of goodie in it. So I'm going to go ahead and let you give the spiel, and whatever I think you miss out, I'll ask you a question about. So go, man.
Yeah, this is just simply a remarkable story. Indeed, the D.C. Board of Elections, to their credit, had invited hackers to try to get into their internet voting system that they were about to go live with for the first time, thanks to this federal Military and Overseas Voter Empowerment Act, the MOVE Act, which put millions of dollars towards jurisdictions setting up their own internet voting pilot programs. And the idea here is that, you know, military voters, we've got so many wars apparently going on around the globe that it's tough to get their ballots back from overseas, wherever they might be, and they're trying to find ways to make it easier for folks in the military and Americans who live overseas to be able to cast their ballot in a timely fashion. So despite all of the warnings that folks like you and I, Ernie, have given them for years about electronic voting, you know, in the polling place, local internet voting, now local electronic voting, now they're going to double down and go with internet voting, incredibly. So the D.C. Board of Elections, to their credit, as I said, suddenly announced, hey, we're going to go live with our midterm internet voting pilot program shortly. But before we do, if anybody wants to try to hack our test server that we've set up, please have at it. And, you know, they gave them about a day warning.
Yeah, so I was going to ask, how much warning? They announced it, and within a day they're on it.
Within 36 hours of this test program going live, it had been completely manipulated, attacked, invaded. It was absolutely incredible. We got our first hints of it came last week when the D.C. Board of Elections had to announce that they were taking down their test program. They said at first, quote, due to usability issues.
Well, are they going to stop the actual voting using this, or are they just going to plow through with that?
Well, indeed, because of what happened here, and I'll give you the details, the remarkable details in a moment, but because of what happened, indeed, they have called off the internet voting pilot program in D.C. for now. You'll still be able to get your ballot via the internet, but if you want to vote in it and send it in, you got to do it the old-fashioned way via snail mail, or in some instances they will allow you to fax it in. But so thank God, because of this test and because of what happened, it has stopped the scheme for now dead in its tracks. I mean, imagine had they done, you know, similar tests to all of the other electronic voting systems, Ernie, that you and I have been fighting against for so many years. You know, I would like to think they would have been stopped in their tracks too, which is probably why they didn't want to have an open test in the past.
Well, there was, you know, some other stuff. Well, I'm sure we'll get to all this. We got plenty of time. But, I mean, one of the things that they went in and they changed the password into the system. And they go, why'd you do that? And they go, hey, man, this is open to the Chinese and Iranian attackers, man. We saved your butt.
Well, this is what happened. Yeah, we started to get word of what had happened last week when voters were using this test system. And suddenly the University of Michigan fight song would start playing after they had cast their ballots. And even at that, it took 3 or 4 days before the D.C. officials noticed there was a problem. And then we found out it was indeed a computer science professor by the name of Alex Halderman from the University of Michigan. He and his team of students had, in fact, within 36 hours, been able to penetrate the system, steal all of the passwords, change every single ballot that had been cast on it to anything of their choice. They actually changed it to a write-in choice on every single ballot. They were able to expose the identity of who voted and how. There goes your secret ballot. They stole the encryption keys. They installed a backdoor to allow them to come back later, but they didn't even need to come back later because, as it turns out, they also put on a script that would change every vote cast in the future, even when they weren't around. So that's what we came to learn last week, which to me and you, Ernie, probably seems mind-blowing enough.
You know, what was interesting, what got the most attention on this is that, and it's kind of smart on their part that they would do this just to demonstrate how much control they had.
Yep.
When you finished your balloting, when you're done, okay, I'm done, you pull the lever, push the button, whatever, and it's done, it's over,
click the
mouse, send it.
In this case.
Yeah, you click the mouse,
right.
All of a sudden the Michigan State fight song started going, you know, whatever it was, and they're going, man, you can't hide from that.
Yeah, it was a bit of a calling card, and they didn't want to say, you know, who they were right away. They didn't want to announce that they had, in fact, succeeded in penetrating their system. So they left that friendly calling card. But, you know, it's disturbing. I was speaking with David Jefferson, who's a cyber expert at Livermore National Laboratories, about this and about what happened here. And, you know, he's disturbed about the fact that they opened up this test for all comers. Somebody completely penetrated the system, completely overwrote every single ballot, and then left this calling card, and yet the officials still didn't notice that the system had been attacked for about 3 or 4 days.
Because they never look. They don't care. You know, it says, once we gain control of this equipment, we could watch in real time on my desktop in Michigan as the network operators configured and tested the equipment. We told the committee we could also watch them on camera because we found a pair of security cameras in the data center were on the same network as the pilot system, and we were publicly accessible with no password at all. So they're like, man, Big Brother big time, and they're just some college students. So I'm going, you know, is this what we've been screaming for years or what?
It was unbelievable. They actually turned the cameras on them, were able to watch everything they were doing, and yet you said that they, you know, stole the password. Well, that was easy because apparently the password, they hadn't bothered to change the master password. It was a 4-digit password, and it was the one that was available in the owner's manual for the system. So getting at the password was easy, but even if it had been changed, it would have been easy because they had the cameras. They had control of the cameras in the security center, and they were watching administrators punch the password in. And amazingly, as Halderman testified on Friday to a hearing in D.C. where there was absolutely nobody in the entire chamber, because, Ernie, none of this matters, none of it is important at all, apparently. But he testified that, yeah, while they were in there hacking, they also noticed that China and Iran were also in there hacking, and they decided to defend the system. Our U.S. hackers defend, you know, the white hat hackers, I guess, here, defended it against foreign hackers by changing the master password for the D.C. voting system and adding some rules to their firewall. You know, because they thought that they should defend it from all enemies, foreign and domestic, I guess. So, I mean,
stunning. It looks like what they were doing is they had such access to the system, they could see kind of the machinations that they were doing, you know, and playing with the system, too. They're going, yeah, not only could we mess with it, we could see you were messing with it, too.
Yeah, I mean, they had complete control of everything, you know, at the moment that they were in there. And then, as I said, in the future, because they had put, and this is something that, you know, I've been talking about for years, you know, the idea that you can put in a script to not just affect this election, but affect all elections in the future, which is what, you know, they demonstrated they were able to do in extremely short order.
Well, so, did they do them a favor? Did they say, oh, yeah, we found all the, you fix this, now it's okay? You know, you were very lucky for us to go in and show you all the problems, and that's all there is, and you fix it, and then, you know, go ahead and do some computer building.
No,
is that
they were
the message?
Actually great. What they said was, look, the various exploits that we were able to take advantage of in this system could be fixed. You can close those holes. But guess what? We will find another and another and another. And they were, you know, straight to the point here in their testimony on Friday, which I have, you can, you know, listen to the whole thing over at bradblog.com. But they were, you know, very straightforward in their testimony to say, look, even if you patch this, there'll be another problem. You cannot do this system. Our technology can't handle it for
decades. Pen and paper. When we come back with Brad Friedman from bradblog.com, we're going to hear the rest of this story. Oh, it's a good one, too. We'll be right back.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
And I'm so sad that they found all the election fraud of the computers. I didn't know that. It's such a shock to me. You know, well, I'll tell you, you know, Brad Friedman and I, we've been doing this a long time, and we've been screaming at the top of our lungs that this was neon flashing obvious. Do you think the people that have been doing this, the agencies, the county clerks, the city clerks, the secretaries of state, and all, do they really have a personal confidence in the system, or they just have some kind of, I don't know, self-motivation, be it whatever it is, to promote the system?
I think they did have confidence in the system. I mean, what I have come to find over these years is that election officials really think their systems are secure, and it's, you know, by and large because the voting machine companies, or in this case it was the Open Source Digital Voting Foundation, who worked on this internet voting scheme, you know, they always tell the officials, oh, these are really secure, you have nothing to worry about. Now, you know, the election officials, you know, nothing against them, but they are not computer scientists. They are not cybersecurity experts. You know, quite often they're, you know, Joe Citizen, who has been elected to be the local election registrar. And so, you know, when they're told by a million, multi-billion dollar company like a Diebold or an ES&S that, oh, yeah, these systems are safe and secure, we're, you know, resting our reputation on it, so you can be assured everything is fine here. You know, I think they really go into it believing that it is secure. And, you know, now D.C. has been burned in the past as well on their local systems. Back in 2008, thousands of phantom votes started showing up on their systems during their 2008 primary elections on their paper-based optical scan systems. And those were made by Sequoia at the time. And, you know, and of course Sequoia lied to them and said, oh, it was due to a static electricity or some nonsense. So they've been burned in the past, which might be why this time around they said, you know what? Okay, the people we're working with who developed the system say it's safe, but we're just going to go ahead and find out if it really is. So I do have to give them credit for that. But the hackers who were able to hack into it and who testified on, you know, not hackers, they're cybersecurity experts, who were able to hack into it, testified last Friday that these are problems that simply cannot be fixed. Our technology that we have today cannot make internet voting safe, period. And as the discovery of, you know, Chinese and Iranian hackers in there as well, I think very well illustrates, this is a national security issue.
Well, where did that come from? Why Iranian and Chinese? Did they see evidence that they were coming in?
Yes. Yeah, well, they were. That's right. They were able, while they were in the system, they were able to see everything that, you know, that the firewall was holding out, that the firewall wasn't holding out. You know, they were able to check the IP addresses of the, you know, the IP, the computers that were hitting the machine, and this is what they were able to find.
Wow. And you know, this has been open. Let's put it this way. Let me just, you know, cut to the chase here.
Yeah.
From your opinion, do you believe that we've had an accurate election in any state since they started using computers in the mid-90s the way they have?
I will say my opinion doesn't matter, in truth. And I'm not trying to dance around the question.
No,
I'm saying
that's fine.
My opinion doesn't matter because, in truth, even if every single election we've had on these systems has been accurate, the problem is that the citizens can't know if it is accurate. You know, and that's the problem out there in Arizona. I know you guys use, for the most part, paper ballots, and people think they're hand-marked paper ballots so that we can always, you know, count them. Problem is, nobody does count them. We still rely on these computer systems.
No, it's illegal to count them. It was illegal to count them until 2006 when I was running for Secretary of State, had all kinds of lawsuits and everything. Bills get, they finally go, okay, we'll do a 2% count, hand count, compare it what the computer says. Okay, fine, about time. Then they don't do it anyway. Or they do it, you know, illegally. Or they take all the ballots and they transfer them to Sheriff Joe's training facility to count them outside of where the law says they're under video surveillance. Or they, and then we're in the lawsuit with them right now for that very thing just a month ago in our primary election here. We know that they lie. We know that they don't want you to be able to check it. We know. And you got to ask why. Because you're talking hundreds of billions and trillions of dollars worth of budgeting that you're in control of, depending on who gets to be in charge of and look the other way and we vote however we're told instead of people that have a conscience being in there. So I'm like, we're not in control of this government, man. That just ain't happening. And until we're successful in making sure that this is open and it's accurate and it can be verified and I get my pen and paper, until then, you know, heck no, I'm not voting because I know better.
Well, listen, I mean, I don't care if you vote or not. I care that if you do vote and you're a legal voter, that you're allowed to vote and that your vote is counted and counted accurately and transparently in a way that the citizenry can know that it has been. And that is, I mean, it seems to me that this issue is step number one towards self-governance. That if, you know, you can't hold an election, that the people, that the citizens, you know, can't oversee themselves to know that the results of the election are accurate, everything else beyond that is BS. I mean, and so, you know, that's why I've been fighting for this issue. And, you know, I know, Ernie, you and I have talked in the past about, you know, how, frankly, how crappy the candidates are that we're ultimately given to choose from at the end of the day, because the media, you know, chooses them for us in so many respects, that they're all sort of bought and paid for by the corporations. And there's certainly truth to that. But, you know, if tomorrow somehow we were able to get all of the corporate money and all of the, you know, the media masterminds out of the elections and you had actual candidates that were running, you still wouldn't be able to know that the one who was announced the winner was actually the winner. I mean, that's why I spend so much time on this. This is step number one.
Well, we have decent candidates. I mean, there's plenty of third party and independent and just throw it up and local and county and state and somebody. There's always, you know, somebody out there that, you know, I would prefer over another if I was going to go vote. But I'm just like, you know, I have no confidence. I'm running for Secretary of State twice, county recorder once. It's not like I think I know. I've been in lawsuits to the Ninth Circuit going down, but long time, way before this is ever a glimmer in your eye, man. Mm-hmm. And I'm telling you, I don't think I know. I know. These guys are bad. They will never put at risk their ability to rule us in the hands of the peoples. That's not going to happen. In fact, when they went in on that, they modified all the ballots that had already been cast to contain a write-in vote for the candidate they selected. I mean, it's even if you did it correct, they go in, changed everything anyway from an outside source, regardless of whether it was the people that actually did the system, that they were corrupt. You have, and we had that here in 2004 in Arizona. What prompted a lot of these changes and it become a big issue here was they had overlapping competing election fraud.
Yeah, but let me tell you what. You can take the, you know, sort of defeatist attitude that, oh, it ain't never going to change. But I'm going to disagree with you. It is going to change, or we're all going to die trying. And the folks out, particularly in Arizona, one of the best states in the union for this, as far as coalition, boots on the ground, election integrity folks who have band together, Democratic, Republican, Green, Libertarian, who are fighting this fight, who are going to court, who are getting decisions in their favor to make it more and more and more possible to oversee the counts, the ballot counting and the way ballots are transported and everything else. They are doing important work on the ground. You have done important work on the ground. So, no, there is no silver bullet. We haven't nailed it yet, but I'm not going to give up and say, oh, it can never be done.
Nor am I. The point that I'm making, Brad, the reason that you have so much work done here in Arizona, the reason that there's so many people that we work together on this, and they're down here a lot, have them on the show, go to the court cases, we, you know, become plaintiffs in the lawsuits, we go through, I'm all in the middle of it, okay? Mm-hmm. No, I haven't given up, you know, on that standpoint of it, but my point is that the reason we do have these kinds of successes, the reason we do have this kind of motivation, the reason that we are effective is because we have gone in with the understanding that they're bad guys from the beginning. These guys do this on purpose.
That's what the premise should be. I mean, the best election officials in the world will tell you, don't trust me. When you come across an election official who says, everything is fine, you can trust me, we got this taken care of, you got to have faith in me, these are the people to not have faith in. Have faith in the ones who say, don't have faith in me, because they know our system is built on oversight and checks and balances, not on trusting anybody.
Well, this is how bad it is in Arizona. We have who was Secretary of State that ran against in 06 that knows how bad it is, that tried to fought tooth and nail not to have any manual validation, to have that law not pass, which it eventually did, but she's now governor. You know, Jan Napolitano went to be head of the Gestapo, and now she's head of the state here, Jan Brewer. There she is, and she's an empty vessel. Then we have, running against her, the Democrat, the Attorney General, Terry Goddard, that was right in the middle of the fraud. So I'm going, wow, are we screwed here? But I always feel good when it's really, 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 really bad right in my backyard. It makes it easy, easy, easy for me to show it. I'm going, looky, looky, how bad it is. Well, sometimes that's when you get the most change. When you have the most that you're able to gain is when you can demonstrate just how bad it is. And they got a video, a DVD, Fatally Flawed. Go look it up on YouTube, on Google Video. Look it up. Fatally Flawed. It's all about here in Arizona with Terry Goddard, the Attorney General, running as a Democrat candidate for governor, and Jan Brewer, who's Secretary of State and Republican and coming governor now, took over from Jan Napolitano. Oh, we're having fun here in Arizona, hey! And we'll be right back with Brad Freeman from bradblog.com and the fun that they're having around the country, too. We'll be right back.